You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Happy weekend, everybody. This is the post-game podcast from the Wolves lost to the Raptors on Friday night. And really the post-game podcast from the dunk of definitely the decade, maybe the century, and certainly top, I don't know, probably top 5 or 10 all time in-game dunks, right? That's what Friday night was all about. Obviously, we have plenty more to talk about related to the game, the Wolves' offensive issues, etc. But the Anthony Edwards dunk is the talk of NBA Twitter still and will be throughout the weekend and is, hands down one of the best Timberwolves dunk moments, probably the best Timberwolves in-game dunk in history as well. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the game as a whole, the key takeaways. That'll be today's show. It'll be a pretty quick-hitting post-game pod to get you caught up if you missed it, and then a quick peek ahead at Sunday's Wolves-Knicks matchup. Before we get to everything, a quick reminder, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you like to get podcasts. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. And also yours truly is at B Beacon on Twitter. That's at B Beacon, two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Okay, so Wolves Raptors, I guess we'll start with the game and then we'll get to the dunk. This game was, the Wolves just beat the Raptors on Sunday. And it was an offensive explosion. The Wolves shot over 50% from the field, over 40% from three. They were pretty dominant in the win over the Raptors. I mean, it was ended up being a close game, but the offense was dominant. The defense struggled a bit with Toronto, but the Wolves offense got what they wanted. That was Ricky Rubio's first good game in a while. Towns was efficient, albeit not as involved as he should have been in the offense. Malik Beasley was very good. And I talked in the preview on Friday's show about the need to get Towns involved early because I thought he could exploit Aaron Baines. I thought he could exploit the front court for the Raptors. Now, in this game, the Raptors actually started Chris Boucher, who's a better defender than Baines. But I figure between the two of them, Siakam wasn't likely to guard Towns. I thought Towns could pretty much get what he wanted. And that was still mostly the case. He once again only had 13 shot attempts in this game. He was third on the team in shot attempts. And somehow the Wolves offense was just, he was easily the Wolves' best offensive player. It was extremely inefficient, really ineffective, and really disappointing in this game. In fact, the Wolves started the game shooting 4 of 24 from the field. 4 of 24 in the first quarter. They made a couple shots towards the end of the quarter, ended up with 15 in the frame, but they had like 10 points with a couple minutes left in the first quarter. We're down 28-15 after the first. Toronto, it's not like the Wolves played terrible defense. Toronto was just pretty efficient offensively. The Wolves, they were okay. Giving up 28 is not the end of the world. I mean, it wasn't the defense's fault. They were down 13. It was actually a miracle they weren't down by more than that because they started the game 4 for 24 from the field. Then the second quarter starts, and the Wolves bench is primarily the bench on the floor, and the Wolves start the second quarter 3 of 14 shooting. So combined the two quarters, they made, again, a couple shots in between, but you combine the two quarters, and the first few minutes to open the first quarter and the second quarter combined, they're 7 for 38 from the field. Just unbelievably, it's just terrible luck, right? And some of them were actually open shots. Credit the Raptors defense. The Raptors defense was obviously great in this game. Anytime you hold an NBA team to 81 points, it's a combination of great defense and terrible offense. And that's exactly what we had. The Wolves were not getting very many open shots. They were actually rotating the ball fairly well offensively. It seemed like they were going to get more open shots than they did, but the Raptors were contesting. They were closing out extremely quickly and really efficiently. They were putting themselves still in a good position to rebound the ball, to recover and close out again. Those things were happening throughout the game, but especially in the early second quarter, the Wolves just hit this point where it was like every time somebody touched the ball, they were just going to chuck a shot up because they figured something had to go in at some point. And it seemed like that was the case. They just missed open shot after open shot after open shot. At one point, they were 1 of 20 on three-point attempts. They started the game 1 of 20. And I mean, I guess the easy math there is that's what, 5% on 3-point attempts, 1 for 20 to start the game. Rubio hit a corner three, sparked a little bit of a run, actually a pretty big run. The Wolves closed the second quarter on a 16-4 run. They were down by as many as 19 points in the middle of the second quarter, close the first half on a 16-4 run, and get to within 10 points at halftime, 45-35. And overall, the Wolves defense, again, was not terrible throughout the first half. They held the Raptors to 17 points in the second quarter. I mean, Norman Powell had 22 points at halftime, made 5 first half threes, and ultimately finished the game with 31. So he only had 9 in the second half. He was really the only Raptors player that killed the Timberwolves. We'll get into this in game takeaways, but Fred VanVleet, I mean, there was no OG Anunoby. I said in the preview I thought they'd have him because he played the last couple games, but he sat out on Saturday, so there was no Anunoby, there was no Kyle Lowry. Fred VanVleet shot 4 of 20 from the field in this game. Siakam was 4 of 10, had 10 points. VanVleet and Siakam, the two best players on the court by far for the Raptors, combined to score just 22 points on 8 of 30 shooting. But Norman Powell had 31 himself on 10 of 19 and basically was the entire offense for the Raptors. They had 4 bench players that played in this game and didn't even score. Toronto did. So the Wolves defense was actually quite good in this game. And per usual, it was more effort than anything else that meant that ensured that they were playing well. I mean, they were actually, Towns was competing. He was better defensively than he'd been the last couple times out. Again, so far this year in the 8 or 9 games he's played, and he's been pretty good defensively, but he seemed to be just a little slow on the defensive end of the floor so far after coming back from the COVID-19 diagnosis. But he was pretty good in this game defensively, and the Wolves as a team, again, were solid. And then the third quarter came, and the Wolves were fantastic in the third quarter. They outscored Toronto 29-13. The quarter actually opened. They got down by 16 about 3 minutes into the third. Anthony Edwards was having just a terrible time. And Ryan Saunders tried the Jake Lehman button. He just said, okay, let's take Ant out. Let's put Jake Lehman in. And immediately, Jake Lehman scores on a back cut and a dunk. Towns finds him cutting baseline and gets him a dunk off of a double team. They were double teaming the post all game on Towns. And for the most part, he did okay. He struggled more earlier in the game than he did late. But he found Lehman for a dunk. The Wolves eventually, this turns into a 25-1 run that spans into the fourth quarter after the timeout, the Lehman substitution. And obviously it's not all because of Jake Lehman, but putting somebody else into the offense that's going to cut and create passing angles. Whereas Edwards, too often, and I talked about this on Friday's show, if you missed it, go back and listen to Friday's show. I talked extensively about Anthony Edwards' offensive play types that he's most successful in, and the fact that he runs a ton of pick and roll, hasn't been good in it, and is last on the Wolves in cut percentage. He doesn't cut. And Lehman comes in the game, basically in the same spot as Edwards, standing in the corner, but then cuts to the rim, finds a passing angle for Towns, scores on a dunk, and ignites this run for the Timberwolves. Eventually, he hits a three as well in the midst of this 25-1 run. Jaden McDaniels and Jared Vanderbilt all night were very good, combining to guard Pascal Siakam. And as I mentioned earlier, Siakam only had 10 points on 10 shots and did a lot, had 3 blocks defensively and was his typical great self on the defensive end of the floor. But the Wolves really limited his effectiveness on offense, especially during the stretch. Toronto couldn't hit the broad side of the barn. Towns had a really good stretch in there as well. And then late in the game, with the Wolves clinging to a couple of possession lead, they got lucky. Toronto was missing a bunch of open threes. They had 2, 3, 4 open threes rattle in and out that they easily could have made to take the lead. The Wolves clung to this 2-point lead for a while. There was a series where Ricky Rubio had 2 bad turnovers leading in the final 2 minutes. Then Anthony Edwards missed an open three. Then Malik Beasley missed a mostly open three. Then Karl-Anthony Towns misses a wide open three. Those are essentially consecutive possessions. And down the stretch, I mean, Toronto goes on a 13-2 run after the Wolves were up 6 with 5 minutes left. 13-2 Toronto run to end the game. The Wolves missed 8 of the last 9 shots. They had 3 turnovers on their last dozen or so possessions. And it was just a miserable end offensively to a game that the Wolves were really good defensively. And actually, the defense wasn't that great in the fourth. It was actually a wonder that Toronto only scored 28 points in the fourth, because as I mentioned, the Raptors were getting plenty of open looks at the basket, especially from three. And Minnesota's rotations and it almost looked like the Wolves were the team playing in the second half of a back-to-back and not Toronto, who had traveled after playing on the road last night on Thursday night. And the Wolves just kind of looked gassed at the end of the game and on both ends of the floor, and Toronto ended up winning by five. So late game execution again, and this wasn't as much execution as it was just making shots and then also defensive intensity, which for some reason was just kind of like, it just wasn't quite where it needed to be. In fact, before we get to full game takeaways, let's break down the last minute of the game when the Wolves had a chance in what was a tie game at that point to have two possessions to the Raptors won, but they messed it up and ended up not really giving themselves a chance to win. So I want to break that down here coming up next before we do key takeaways and individual studs and duds. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts a breakdown of the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. Okay, so the final minute of the game, I talked already about the missed shots, the turnovers, the allowing Toronto to get plenty of open shots. So the Wolves get the ball after getting a stop on the Raptors with about 58 seconds left. The Wolves get a rebound, bring it up court, call timeout. Wolves still at this point have one timeout remaining, tie game, 47.7 seconds left. The Wolves run a pick and roll. Towns set two screens. It was the second one. He commits an offensive foul. It was probably the right call. It's the old, they could call a moving screen in almost every possession, and why they would choose to call one in the final 47 seconds of a game, who knows? But they did, and it technically was the right call. Towns is called for a moving screen. Toronto gets the ball. Toronto comes down and runs an action to get Terrence Davis open in really kind of the left slot, and Edwards had to fight through a couple of screens, but reacted late. If you go back and watch it, Edwards is guarding Davis on the baseline, almost kind of near the dunker spot on the baseline. And Edwards just is a split second late reacting, fights through the screens, and gets a hand up just a split second late. Davis rattles in the three. Not a bad defensive possession, just really good offense from Toronto. And that's typical of a Nick Nurse team. They ran several ATOs in this game that were just unbelievable. And this, they didn't even call a timeout before this. They came down right after and they kept their timeout. So they still had two timeouts, didn't call a timeout, came down, ran the set, got the three for Davis. And now it's a 3-point game with 30 seconds left. The Wolves don't use their final timeout here. They come down, somehow end up in basically a broken play, and Beasley shoots a contested three from almost the same spot on the floor as Davis had just made his on the other side, but it was unnecessary. It was almost like Beasley was like, I could shoot a three here. We're down three. I'll just shoot it. But it was, you know, they still had 10 seconds on the shot clock, 12 seconds on the shot clock. And it didn't make sense. It was a bad shot. Beasley missed it. Raptors get the rebound. Wolves foul. Now they're down five. Wolves call their timeout, and then they're not able to score and they lose by five. So, poor late game execution. Saunders calling the timeout with 48 seconds left made sense. He was setting up a 2-for-1. If the Wolves hadn't committed a personal or an offensive foul 6 seconds into their possession after the timeout, it would have worked. If they had killed a little bit more clock, gotten a shot up, and hopefully made the shot, then things change very drastically and they give themselves time. And they still did get the 2-for-1 because, I mean, it wouldn't have worked out that way because the foul happened so early and Toronto would have gotten another possession regardless. But, I mean, Toronto still scored with 31 seconds left and the Wolves had the ball down three. And that's where, if I'm Saunders, I call the timeout because it's more important you tie the game there. And then Toronto's going to call a timeout before their next possession in a tie game. So that was the one area where Saunders messed it up. They should have called timeout, gotten their ducks in a row, made sure they got a good shot up. They didn't. Beasley forced a shot. They lost by five. So poor late game execution, which is at this point fairly par for the course for the Timberwolves. This one was more on the players in terms of actually making shots. I mean, they ran a little too much Rubio Towns pick and roll down the stretch in a game that Rubio really struggled. The Raptors were not honoring Rubio with the ball in his hands nearly as much as they would have been had he had a better first part of the game, had it been Anthony Edwards operating the pick and roll, which I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but I think they could have mixed it in a little bit, or Jordan McLaughlin. I know that Rubio's been kind of the guy that Saunders always goes with down the stretch, but they could have gone with McLaughlin. I guess you probably can't go 2 point guards against this Raptors team with, you know, if Lowry and Van Vliet were both in the game, perhaps the Wolves would have gone McLaughlin, Rubio, but with Lowry out, the Wolves went with a little bit of a bigger, more traditional lineup. And it didn't go with both players. But at that point, obviously, I think you just leave McLaughlin out there with with Beasley and whoever else that can give you some offense. I don't know that you'd need both Rubio and McLaughlin. So that's really my only beef with the coaching down the stretch, was a little too much Rubio Towns pick and roll and a little bit of timeout mismanagement. Once again, I liked the timeout at 48 seconds, but I did not like the timeout or the lack of a timeout after the Raptors scored. And then I guess while we're talking about coaching, the other takeaway was obviously the Jake Layman sub in the third quarter was great. You're down 16. The offense has been terrible. Why not get some movement? It was too stagnant. It was dump the ball into Towns. He gets double teamed. Everybody stands on the perimeter and doesn't give him passing lanes. Towns would force up a tough shot, or he turned it over trying to make a great pass to somebody who's just standing on the perimeter. Finally, they put in Jake Layman. They find somebody who can cut, create those angles for Towns. They do it. They go on a run and take a lead, going into the fourth quarter, and a lead that was as many as six early in the fourth. So that was the right button to push by Saunders in the third quarter. So kudos to him for that. As I mentioned, I thought this game was almost as much strong defense by both teams as it was bad offense. I mean, there were times where in the first half, the Raptors were missing open shots. The fourth quarter, the Raptors were missing open shots down the stretch. The Wolves missed open shots throughout the game, but there's always going to be open shots. So the bad offense portion of this was these teams missing the few open shots that they did get. And that just compounded the offensive issues. The majority of the game, both teams were playing good defense. They were rotating crisply. They were closing out well. I mean, shots were being contested for the most part. And, other than a couple of stretches here and there, the Raptors actually did fairly well on the offensive glass. And second chance points were, again, an issue for the Wolves, or second chance opportunities, really. There were a lot of foul calls, I guess, as well in this game. So, and part of that contributed to the offense being suppressed a little bit, I think. And the Wolves themselves only attempted 11 free throws as a team again, which is, that's another story for another day. But we've talked quite a bit about the Wolves' issues drawing fouls. And that was a problem again in this game. They weren't able to do it consistently. So a well-played game defensively, some offensive stretches that really made this score feel like it was 1996. And there's no denying that. But I don't want to discredit either team's defense, because especially Toronto's was very impressive. And the Wolves at times were very good too. Wolves broadcaster Alan Horton noted that the Wolves are now 7-11 when they have a lead in the fourth quarter, which is crazy. That's the league's worst mark, Alan points out. Fourth quarter lead could mean 1 point, but still, if that means that you're in a close game, if you're ever ahead in the fourth quarter, it's by definition a close game. And you should have a little, you should win a slightly higher percentage of that because, again, by definition, you've had the lead. To go 7-11 in 18 games when you have a fourth quarter lead, I mean, flip that. Flipping that wouldn't be crazy. 11-7 would actually still not be that good. And then look at the improvement on the Wolves' record. They would be what? 11-19 or something? I mean, you'd be in the conversation for a playoff spot. So that shows you, A, that the execution's been terrible all year, late game situations, players, coaches, everybody, bad execution. And secondly, this team's really not that far off, as crazy as that seems. And there's a little bit of it's kind of a crazy dichotomy to think about, because obviously if you're going to be a playoff team, you have to execute on at least competently at the end of a game. We've very rarely seen that. But it again underscores the point that this team has some talent. They have some, world-class talent in Karl Anthony Towns and some other very good players in Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, and others, some of these young players as well. They just need to figure out this late game execution. They need to figure out the right buttons to push late in the game. They need to figure out how to run offense. Whether, at times the Wolves have called timeout late in games and set things up that haven't worked, like this game when Towns committed the offensive foul. There's been other side out of bounds plays where Saunders, I don't know what he's calling, or I don't know what the Wolves are doing execution wise. Or there's been other times where they've called the right play. They've done that part right. And then they just don't execute on the court. The Anthony Edwards play where they got him and Towns in pick and roll action just the other night. Edwards didn't exactly do what he was supposed to do. Still got a decent look, and the shot just rimmed out. I mean, there's some bad luck involved too. We can't overlook that, but to go 7-11 in 18 games with the fourth quarter lead is just unbelievable. What I want to do next is talk individual studs and duds for this game. And that'll be coming up next year. We'll put a wrap on this one and look ahead to the weekend and the week ahead. Betting on sports does not have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. Okay, so let's talk individual studs and duds from Wolves Raptors. This is actually tricky. The Wolves didn't have anybody score more than 19 points. They only had one player score more than 13 points, and only three players in double figures. As you might expect in a game that the Wolves only scored 81 points, the offense was horrendous. The efficiency was non-existent. The Wolves shot 38.6% as a team from the field, 23.7% beyond the arc. Remember, they started the game 1 of 20, so they finished 8 of 18. If you want to, I don't know, a little bit of a silver lining, but still for the game, that's under 24%. They attempted only 11 free throws and made 8 of them. You have to give one to Towns if we're going to have to name a stud in this game. I don't know that I really want to. Towns still had 5 turnovers to only 4 assists and did struggle at times with the double team with the pressure the Raptors were bringing. Remember, they played Towns in the post far more often last weekend against Charlotte, actually a week ago last Friday night. And then when they played Toronto on Sunday, the Wolves went more to their more traditional, the set that they play the most as their base set, the 5-out offense. And in this game, they were putting Towns in the post more often like they did against Charlotte. And the Raptors' defense was collapsing on him. They were double-teaming him. They were filling passing lanes. And with the athletes that the Raptors have on the perimeter, with the defenders like Siakam and in the post like Chris Boucher, Norman Powell's a solid defender, DeAndre Bembry, they've got a bunch of guys, Stanley Johnson off the bench, who have the length to clog passing lanes and be effective in that way. And that's exactly what happened. The Wolves were not effective when Towns was getting the catch in the post. He still made lemons out of lemonade several times and ended up shooting for the game 8 of 13. He made some tough shots, but this was another game. He only had 3 three-point attempts, and he's very quickly, his three-point rate is plummeting. And that'll be a conversation that we likely will cover on Monday or maybe Tuesday of next week, is the lack of three-point attempts for Towns so far since he's been healthy. And that's not a good turn of events. But the positive was he was 8 of 13 from the field, 19 points, 13 rebounds. He did have the 4 assists and 2 blocks, but he turned it over 5 times, did commit 4 fouls, including that back-breaking offensive foul in the final 40 seconds or so. He only had 2 free throw attempts in this game as well. But overall, given the pressure that they brought and the lack of help he got from his teammates, Towns was pretty good. He also only played 31 minutes in this game. Much of the Wolves' big run that they made to take the lead was made with him off the floor, which is a big reason for that. The Wolves kept him and Rubio off the floor and allowed the bench unit to make their run. And in hindsight, they should have kept the bench unit on the floor longer in this game, because it was the starters who really struggled in the fourth quarter primarily. So Towns gets a stud in this game simply for the 19 and 13 and because nobody else did anything. Also, he was very good defensively. We need to give credit where credit's due. He was part of Siakam struggling because Towns was clogging the paint. And the Raptors centers, not that Boucher and Baines do a ton offensively anyways, but they combined to score only 11 points and have 14 rebounds between the two of them. Solid defensive game for Towns, and I think that needs to be noted, even though he did have the 5 turnovers, the bad offensive foul, etc. Another stud for this game, Jordan McLaughlin. He should have been playing down the stretch, full stop. And I think Ricky Rubio has been great lately. I think he is still a good player and has just had a bad season so far. There's some fit issues, etc. I understand why he's the guy down the stretch, but Jordan McLaughlin had 11 points and 7 assists in 22 minutes, 5 of 8 shooting. He had a steal, 0 turnovers, was a -3, mostly because the second quarter was awful across the board for the Wolves, but he was very good in the third quarter. The -3 is actually one of the better marks on the Wolves in this game. He was quite good and should have been on the floor down the stretch. There's really no other way to say that. Also, we have to give one to Jake Lehman. We're giving out 3. We typically give out 3. We'll give one to Jake Lehman. Yeah, he only had 8 points, 3 rebounds, but he also only played 13 minutes, was a +14 in a game the Wolves lost by 5, and he basically was on the court in place of Edwards. Anthony Edwards had a -13 in this game, which, again, the caution that I always give, the single game plus minus, all the noise involved. But when you've got a guy who's a -13 and the guy that comes in for him is a +14, obviously somebody was doing something right and somebody was doing something wrong. I think this is probably the right time. I haven't talked about the Edwards dunk since the Open. We got to talk a little more about it in between studs and duds here, because Edwards should be a dud for this game because of his 3 of 14 shooting, 0 of 7 outside the arc. But that dunk was unbelievable. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you've seen the dunk many times from every possible angle, as I have. And it checks all the boxes. I mean, it was a close game. The defender actually tried to block the shot. There was some real effort there. He was fouled. He still made the dunk. It was a clean dunk. The ball went clean through the net. Didn't rattle around. Made a great sound. The only thing that could have been better is if Edwards hadn't fallen over, but he basically rode Watanabe to the ground in that moment. And then he made the free throw too on the end one to cap it all off. Everything about it was fantastic. And I don't think, I said this on Twitter, I hate hyperbole. This has to be one of the top, certainly five dunks of this century. I mean, obviously the DeAndre Jordan, Brandon Knight dunk comes to mind. LeBron jumping over, I think it was John Lucas III comes to mind. There's the J.R. Smith, the two-handed dunk when he was at the Nuggets way back in the day. There's a handful that are on that list, but this one's right up there. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I don't really know what else to say about it other than, I mean, he tried one like it earlier in the game and just came up a little short. One of the great things about these Wolves rookies, Edwards and Jaden McDaniels, is they're both trying to sling the ball on people at the rim every night. They're not afraid to get their shot blocked. Andrew Wiggins went through a phase where he did that. You know, he dunked on Rudy Gobert. That's another one. If you're talking about best dunks in Wolves history, that's on the list for sure. He threw it down on Gobert. There was one in particular that was very good, but he had a couple of dunks against Gobert. And you factor in the quality of the defender, obviously. I mean, Rudy Gobert is worlds better than Yuta Watanabe as in terms of defensive ability and shot blocking and rim protection. But Wolves fans know Wiggins, that was a very rare stretch for him to be that aggressive at the rim. Typically, he was more, you know, layups, finger rolls, et cetera, and not going strong to the rim. Both McDaniels and Edwards they want to dunk it. They want to dunk the ball. And so this was exhibit 1A of that. And I mean, if there's the chance that we're going to see this every night, I mean, this isn't going to happen every night, but there's a chance every night that something like this happens with Anthony Edwards on the court. And that's can't miss basketball. It's fantastic. I can't give him a dud for this game because of that. And you know, it's arbitrary. Clearly this is me deciding that I can't do that. 7 points on 3 of 14 shooting, 0 of 7, from beyond the arc. He did have 4 assists, only 1 turnover. So that continues to improve the assist to turnover for Edwards, but he really struggled with his decision-making. Wasn't making open threes, wasn't making contested threes, just a bad game for Anthony Edwards, but a fantastic dunk. And that does not change the fact that it was a fantastic dunk. And it does not mean we can't celebrate said dunk and just marvel at the athletic ability and the confidence and all of that that Anthony Edwards has. So kudos to Ant for an awesome dunk. And also after the game, he recognized when he was asked by media, he recognized that it was an awesome dunk, understood it, put it in its proper context of, hey, I didn't have a good game and we didn't win, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, it was an awesome dunk. I thought he struck the right balance there as well. Fantastic by Anthony Edwards. The actual duds for this game, I got to give one to Malik Beasley, 13 points on 5 of 16 shooting. He was 3 of 9 outside the arc, but that means he was just 2 of 7 inside the arc. Didn't get to the free throw line, only five rebounds and 1 assist. Didn't do much else in this game. Missed a couple of bad or shots he should have made down the stretch. Took that bad 3 that he probably shouldn't have taken. Missed a couple 3s in rhythm towards the end of the game that would have made a big difference. So just not a good game from him. And then, I don't know, I guess that's really it. Nobody else really had, I mean, Ricky Rubio wasn't very good. He had 7 points, 4 assists, 3 turnovers, 2 of 6 shooting, 1 of 4 outside the arc, was not as good as he's been the last couple of games. Of his 3 turnovers though, there were 2 really big ones down the stretch that were just bad decisions, bad turnovers. So I guess we could give him one as well, just because of the timeliness of those turnovers. Jalen Noel had another ineffective game, no points on 2 misses in 8 minutes. I think they were all first half minutes. And the Wolves pushed the Jake Lehman button. So Okogie only had 7 minutes and Jalen Noel had 8. We're last on the team in minutes in this game. So overall, just a frustrating game that the Wolves made a great comeback in, had a fantastic third quarter, had an awesome highlight reel dunk, all-time dunk, a lead late in the game, and just, again, a lack of execution. And this time it was the offense that did them in. And again, the encouraging thing is the defense continues to improve and look better, almost consistently on a nightly basis. It seems to get better. And having Towns in the middle and Towns playing hard defensively has made a world of difference. And so hopefully that's something that continues to happen. The Wolves are off on Saturday, and then they're in New York to take on Tom Thibodeau and the New York Knicks on Sunday evening, 6 p.m. Of course, also former Wolves Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson, and that's not a surprise to anybody that those guys both ended up in New York. So Wolves-Knicks for Madison Square Garden on Sunday at 6 p.m. Of course, we'll have a pod on Monday morning, or actually probably late Sunday, post-game pod, that will be Monday's show, and then We'll also look at the week ahead when we get to Monday. That includes games on the road against Milwaukee, Chicago, and the Washington Wizards. So some winnable games in there, including Sunday at the Knicks. Hopefully, it doesn't seem likely that Culver will be back yet. It sounds like he's doing on-court activity now. So maybe sometime next week, the Wolves will get another perimeter defender back. And right now, they've just got to figure out that offense more than anything. So we'll be back, of course, Sunday evening, Monday morning with the post-game on the Knicks and looking ahead at the week. Otherwise, have a fantastic weekend. That's all we have today on the show. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast anywhere that you do get podcasts. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves or at B Beacon, B-B-E-E, 2 B's, 2 E's, C-K-E-N. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.